Order, order.
Select committee report.
A petition calling for the mandatory labelling of products containing palm oils was presented to the Commerce Committee on Thursday. Representing the Unmask Palm Oil Group, Ben McDowdle said the harvesting of palm oil was destructive to the habitats of endangered species.
Because it's used in such a wide range of products, it's very, very cheap, it's very, very versatile. The basic consensus among most environmental groups is that it is here to stay. So instead of shifting the problem else around the world, we're not advocating a boycott. The issue with a boycott is that there's a very real chance that we would stop the palm oil industry and then shift all this demand onto the soybean industry and start deforestation in the Amazon instead. So we want to transform the market through certified sustainable palm oil, which is a certification scheme. It's what fair trade is to coffee, basically. It guarantees a deforestation-free product throughout the supply chain.
Mr. Dowdle explained that the issue was already on the international agenda.
What we're ultimately working up to is the June meeting of the Legislative and the Governance Forum on Food Regulation, and that's 10 ministers from every state, territorial and federal government of Australia and New Zealand, which just gives us the one vote out of 10, which might not seem so fair. And so we want the New Zealand government, Nikki Kaye, as Food Safety Minister, to be supporting us on that.
Ben McDowdle with that petition calling for the mandatory labelling of palm oil. The petition remains under consideration of the Commerce Committee. Also during the week, on Wednesday, the Auditor-General's Office, which keeps track of the performance of Crown-owned companies, fronted up to the Finance and Expenditure Committee to present three reports. One of those regarded Auckland water supplier Watercare Services, another was a reflection on the wider auditing process, and the third report was on the future focus of Crown-owned companies. Presenting that last report was Assistant Auditor-General Anne Webster.
Crown-owned companies are an important part of the public sector. They hold over $28 billion of assets. Annually, they collect over $5 billion in revenue. And beyond their finances, they carry out some really strategically important functions in the public sector, like electricity infrastructure, like evidence testing in the courts, like ensuring our meat exports are safe.
Ms. Webster outlined the findings of the report, which focused on the governance of Crown companies.
Although there were many examples of excellent governance, across the entities we looked at, we didn't find any that were practising all of them on a regular, ongoing basis. And so we found inconsistency in the quality and habits of governance practices. For example, we might find an entity that was good at focusing on their long-term future, but they might not be thinking about their downside risks and focusing on that future. Or we might find that an entity was preparing for downside risks, but not thinking about their strategic contribution to the public sector.
And a handful of Crown entities got special mention.
We did find quiet achievers, entities like the Met Service, Assure Quality, Scion, Plant and Food and GNS, that have many of the features of what we think is common sense governance practices. In those sorts of entities, what we tended to find was a proactive approach by the board. Three practices seem to be important in that public sector context: mutual respect, good information, and the board, minister and monitoring agency sharing it, an understanding of purpose, role and public sector context.
Assistant Auditor-General Anne Webster. And finally this week, on Thursday, the Primary Production Committee was briefed on the health of bees in light of declining bee populations around the world. Speaking at that briefing was Ministry for Primary Production Advisor Tony Robinson.
When you look at the figures for New Zealand, you don't, you know, which with hive numbers and honey, you know, production and beekeepers, etc., all rising, there isn't obvious evidence of problems. What we do have is obviously some anecdotal reports of problems and hive losses. When those are looked at more closely, very often they relate to varroa or other activity, lack of food and these sort of things, rather than the classical colony collapse disorder, which has been reported in the US.
Mr. Robinson said New Zealand could benefit from international experience.
In Europe, with their suspension of the use of these chemicals for a period, alongside that is a research program to look at possible effects. And I think they're spending many tens of millions of dollars on those research programs. So we and the EPA are looking closely at the outcomes of those research and awaiting that with interest.
Mr. Robinson also suggested the effect of chemicals on bee populations was easier managed than potential bee diseases.
One of the things about any chemicals is that they would, although they can be used from year to year, if there is a problem, you can stop that use, and providing they not don't have a long persistence in the environment, that impact will be taken off the bees and the environment over time. It's not quite like something which is permanent.
Ministry for Primary Production Advisor Tony Robinson with that briefing to the Primary Production Committee on the health of bees in New Zealand. All up, there were 14 committee meetings held during the week. I'm Rhys Lyon reporting for parliamenttoday.co.nz with funding from the Office of the Clerk.